Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture. In his metaphysical poem, or at least the fragments that we possess of it, we see Parmenides narrating a choice that he has to make between two fundamentally different ways of looking at reality, one of which is the path of being, or of it is, and the other is the path of non-being or becoming. The one is true, the other one is false. And he ends up opting, clearly, for the path of being. And he also tells us about what being is. And by contrast, he tells us a little bit about what not being or non-being isn't, because he can't say what it is because it doesn't have an is. And some of the things that he has to say are quite pictorial, you could say. He talks about it as being like a well-rounded sphere from every side, like the body of it, everywhere of equal intensity from the center. And so there are these spatial descriptions of it, but it's not as if it's a sphere within a universe that contains other things. It simply is everything, the totality, and that is some sort of well-rounded sphere. Parmenides is a monist, which means that he thinks that everything is ultimately one, and the name for that one is being, to einai. So one of the things that he says early on in fragment 8, which is where he's giving the real description of this, is a little bit paradoxical. And there's a lot of paradoxicality in this poem itself. He tells us that on the route or path, the hodos, the road, if you like, of being, on this way there are many signs indicating that what is, and then he tells us about what, you know, the characteristics of being are. But he says there are many signs, samat easi pola. And so what does he mean by signs? That you could say criteria, you could say indices, you could say ways in which we come to grasp what the nature of being is, according to Parmenides. So what are some of these characteristics? He tells us that it is unborn, agenaton, right? It is not generated by anything else. And we'll look at the argument that he provides for that in just a moment. It's also imperishable. It cannot go out of being. It cannot be corrupted, destroyed in any way. An olethron, right? It cannot be undone, you might say, by anything else, because there literally is nothing else. So he says, it was not once, nor will it be. There is no past in which it emerged. There is really no future for it because it is entirely, and this is a really interesting way of thinking about things, it is now, nun esti, nun is now in Greek, right? A whole, pan, one, hen, continuous, suneches. So these are saying that it has all of these attributes. Or, if you like, it is these attributes in a way that nothing else could possibly be. And it is all of these now eternally. It was that before. From our perspective of before, it will be that in the future, from our perspective of the future. But there really is no before or after for being itself. So he goes on and he says, what birth could you seek for it? How and from what did it grow? Now, these are rhetorical questions because he's going to then say, neither will I allow you to say, right? It wasn't born from anything. Or to think that it grew from what is not, for that it is not, cannot be spoken or thought. Now, that's an interesting argument to make. He's not just saying that you can't get nothing from nothing, right? I'm using a double negative there. Actually, you can get nothing from nothing. You just can't get anything else from it. You can't get something from nothing. He's saying that you can't even think what non-being is, so because you can't think it, nothing could have come from it. It's a little bit different than merely enunciating the metaphysical principle that we see in so many other schemes, that nothing comes from nothing, right? So it can't have its origin in non-being at all. Then he says, also, what need could have impelled it to arise later or sooner if it sprang from an origin in nothing? There would have to be some sort of cause, some sort of explanation, something that could compel being to come out of non-being into being, if indeed this was going to be the case. And Parmenides says that's simply not the case, and it's unthinkable. So he goes on and says, nor ever will the power of trust allow that from what is, it becomes something other than itself. So it can't change. And here we get to a really interesting point. Parmenides has just said that being can't be produced. But he uses three different sort of mythological concepts here, concepts that are going to become demythologized in later Greek ideas. One is justice, dike. Another is necessity, ananke. And then fate, moira. And he talks about each of these at different points in this fragment as in some way binding or necessitating, to use the very word, doing something with being. Not in the sense of like a before and after, but always doing that. So he says, this is why justice has not freed it, relaxing the grip of her fetters, either to be born or to perish. No, she holds it fast. So the implication here is that if being wasn't compelled by justice, if it wasn't bound, fettered by justice, well, then it could, in fact, turn into non-being or come out of non-being. But since justice actually compels it in this way, that can't be the case. And says, the decision on these matters depends on this. It is or it is not. And it has been decided as was necessary. So there's a little, again, paradox there. A little bit later on, he talks about fate. He says, apart from what is, nothing else either is or will be, since what is what fate, moira, bound to be entire and changeless. So again, it seems like fate is compelling being to be what it is. And just a little bit earlier, he uses the term ananke. He says, it stays in the same state and in the same place, lying by itself, and so it stays firmly as it is. Why? For mighty necessity holds it in the bonds of a limit which restrains it all about, because it is not lawful for what is to be incomplete. So necessity now is what won't allow being to, you know, turn into non-being or to admit of anything missing within it or open itself up. Now that's, like I said, a little paradoxical, because first, we're starting with being and this monism, everything is being and that's all there is. And then it seems like there's something over being. Whether we call it fate, necessity, or justice, it makes being be the way that it is. Now, here's where it gets more paradoxical. If we think this through, that fate, that necessity, that justice would in fact have to be part of, an aspect of being. So really what's going on here, if we think it through, is being is compelling itself to remain within these limits and not to have relations with non-being, or however else we want to put it, to be timeless, eternal, entirely connected, one, all of these attributes. So, you know, this is something that is a little bit tricky to think through. What else can we say about being? It's not infinite. Now, the word that we are translating sometimes in English as infinite isn't actually infinite in the sense of apeiron in Greek, without a limit, which is usually the word translated as infinite. Rather, better translation, incomplete. It's not incomplete. Ateleu teton. So, telos means end in Greek. Teleu teton means brought to its end, brought to its fulfillment, fully developed. A is a privative, so it's not without having been brought to its fulfillment. And again, there's no temporal succession here, so it's not as if it ever was lacking any sort of fulfillment. It is entirely what it is. And he goes on and says, because there's no lack in it. And then there's something really interesting that comes up, a sort of suggestion. If it were to lack anything, it would lack everything, he says. There is no lack in it. If there were, it would lack everything. So, you know, this is a pure hypothetical possibility from Parmenides' point of view, but he's saying this is one reason why it cannot be unfulfilled or incomplete in any way whatsoever. To be infinite is to be, in a certain way, incomplete. You haven't finished the series, right? From a Greek perspective. Now, he finishes by saying that human beings have given names, onomata, to things having believed them to be true. And it's an interesting list that he provides us here. He's contrasting this to being. He says, both birth and perishing. Human beings think that Genesis, birth or coming into being, and perishing, being corrupted, disappearing, are real things, but they're not real things. They're part of that path of non-being or becoming. What else? He says change of place, alteration of blood, of bright coloring. Those two, moving from one place to another, alteration in one of the most tangible, or rather most perceptible qualities, right? Changing of bright coloring, going from green to red, or whatever we want it to be. But then he says, and he's using these very words here, what else? Human beings think that being and non-being, enai tekai uchi, being and it's not, are real. So does this like upset the proverbial apple cart at this point? Or should we see this as saying that the ways that human beings understand being are actually wrong because it's contrasting being with not being, and there is no not being to contrast being with? That's probably the better interpretation here. So this is what Parmenides means when he's talking about being and this first path or route or road, a way of looking at things. There are, as I pointed out, quite a few paradoxes involved in this, and it's a little tricky to wrap our heads around. Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/Sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.